It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, the Pacers return to Indy with the series even at 1-1 after their Game 2 win. They were calm, and the moment wasn't too big for them. Siakam went off, and they were able to get out and run. To discuss the series so far, I'm joined by Kevin Bowen of 107.5 The Fan.
I know that Fieldhouse Files has a prolific following. You know, I just want to be careful about sharing too much with the world.
And welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, the podcast where I take you behind the scenes with the Pacers, talk to individuals on and around the team, and tell you what you need to know. Pacer fans, are you ready? The team will host its first playoff game in 5 years coming up on Friday against the Bucks. It will be Game 3, and note the start time, again, 5:30 p.m. Eastern as part of a triple header. I don't like or completely understand that start time, but it's all about TV having this triple header, but it means you won't have trouble watching this one as it'll air on ESPN as well as Bally Sports Indiana. Now, Giannis doesn't appear to be any closer to a return, still dealing with a calf strain. We'll learn more coming up on Friday before the game. Siakam for the Pacers has been spectacular, the best player in all postseason games thus far, consecutive games with 35-plus points in them. And if you don't understand why they traded for him, sending out 3 first-round picks, well, now you're seeing it. This is why. This is exactly why. On both ends of the floor, and a guy who has been there and experienced all those emotions and the wave of a postseason, unlike something that can even really truly be shared with teammates that have not experienced that. Otherwise, Andrew Nembhard has stepped up to the plate at both ends and played well. And you can go on down the line, but I also appreciate it in particular the contributions from Aaron Nesmith in so many ways, including wrapping up his teammates to say, hey, no, we're not getting into any battles physically right now. Let's reset, refocus, and get back to playing basketball. So to discuss what we saw in the first 2 games, both in Milwaukee, radio host Kevin Bowen joins the show. He co-hosts the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy each weekday from 7 to 10 a.m. on 107.5 The Fan in Indy, where I also serve as a contributor. KB is on the Colts beat as well, where I'm on the Pacers route after we were in school together down in Bloomington. So that's been a lot of fun as well. So enjoy this conversation and be sure not to miss any of my content at fieldhousefiles.com. Stories are delivered right to your inbox and both free and paid subscriptions are available. All right, as promised, I now welcome onto the show Kevin Bowen, longtime, wow, that sounds weird, long time, but it's true, longtime radio host of the morning show, Wake Up with KB and Andy. I join them every Thursday morning, and KB, you just wrapped up Wednesday's show. Curious, what was your general feel and conversation after this Game 2 win? Because it was drastically different from Game 1, and we were all so curious, I think, to see how would this team respond. Would they roll over? Were they just outmatched? Or were they ready to make this a series once again?
Yeah, you know, Scott, a staple of their team all year long has been they have responded well. You know, I don't think they've allowed things to snowball. We haven't seen the big losing streaks, you know, when they have had the ugly performances. Again, to me, it hasn't necessarily been a hangover there for the next couple of games. But still, you know, the playoffs are different. And how would they respond? And they did it in extremely impressive fashion. I don't know how you can talk about last night and really not just lead off with Pascal Siakam.
Yep.
I mean, I just beyond impressed by what he did. You know, you obviously have covered the team for a long, long time. It just was so reminiscent of those David West moments where, you know, at times you'd probably label Paul George more than Tyrese Halliburton if you want to compare the teams. But yet when you needed to stop bleeding in those playoff series runs, when you needed kind of an adult to make a play, so many times it was West, and I thought so many times last night it was Siakam. And, you know, I think both kind of have a little bit of a similar style. You know, Siakam's obviously a little bit more of a, you know, he's got a little bit more diversity to his game than West, but still just methodical, cool, calm, collected. Again, adult-like, tremendous. Nembhard, tremendous. But overall, just the response as well. Very impressive to get one on the road, and I thought a must because you never know what's going to happen.
No. No, we're not going must win, KB. I can't let that slide.
I thought without Giannis, this series is pre-Giannis, post-Giannis. And to me, getting a game with – assuming Giannis returns, let's just play out the hypothetical he returns in game four. That means they're going to get two home games with him if it goes a seven-game series. In my opinion – you know, if you want to win this series, you had to get one without him on the road. And so that's why I did view last night in that sort of light. Obviously, by definition, no. But, again, I think come playoff time, knowing that Siakam will take on more of a burden with Giannis on the floor, on both ends of the floor, I thought last night was just so, so critical.
I get that in terms of, Giannis is out. You want to see them take advantage. The other thing here is whenever Giannis does return, what's he going to look like? Because those calf strains are not comfortable. That's going to lead to hesitation, right? Because we're all connecting the dots. A bad calf strain could become an Achilles injury. I also wonder what his game shape is looking like. He hadn't played in over 2 weeks of basketball, and yes, he's an elite athlete and things like that, but all we know that he's done on the court is do some on-court work, do some shooting. So no reporting here, or not too much reporting here, but it sure just doesn't seem like he's going to be back even for these two games in Indy. It feels like the best case might now be a game, you know, five back in Milwaukee, but we don't know too much about that. I want to go back to your original comment about Pascal and feeling like David West, and you mentioned the three C's. That's where I was going to go with that, because even beyond his game, throw out the, like, scoring total. He has that David West figure of, all right, follow me. I got this. I'm calm. This is not a big deal. I've been through this before. Just follow my lead, and we got this. And I think that was among the best things that we saw from the Pacers team last night. Four turnovers in the meaningful minutes. They did not panic like they did in game one.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I was talking with my co-host Andy Sweeney this morning about it, and I almost want to put, like, blood pressure meters on Pacer fans when they watch the Pacers. And, like, when certain guys catch the ball, I'd love to see how the blood pressure rises or drops. And I have a feeling, at least that's how I feel, and again, I'm not going to act like I'm, you know, sitting in Turner's block for 41 home games of the year, but there's a calmer feeling when Siakam gets his hands on it for me than when some others do. And, I mean, just look at game one. You know, I thought at times, Scott, it looked like a bunch of, you know, freshmen getting their first varsity minutes with the amount of nerves you saw from the Pacers in that game one. And really, Siakam was the only one that I felt like was very poised. You know, I found it interesting, Carlisle, talking after the game last night, said, you know, that's kind of his demeanor, that's his personality, to the point that you kind of made. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't see super demonstrative moments from Siakam on the floor, and I think that's so critical in the playoffs. And you know what? My hand is raised because I was lukewarm on the trade, and I probably didn't give enough credence to what this time of year is all about and the ability to have individual scores that you can just throw the ball to and they can make a play for you without a whole lot needed around them. That's beyond valuable. And certainly Siakam has brought that in the first two games of this series. So I could not offer more praise than him. But frankly, I thought last night, I don't think it's hyperbole. I thought it was one of the greatest performances in Pacers playoff history.
Yeah, I mean, became the second Pacers player after Reggie Miller, shocking, to have back-to-back 35-point performances. We're used to great performances, maybe not even high scoring, though, right? It might have been a 22 and 12 assists or a buzzer-beating performance, that type of thing, or a big dunk by Paul George. But go back to exactly what you just talked about in terms of having a guy that can go get his own and create on the wing. That is what wins in the postseason, and that, guess what, is what the Pacers have been without really since Paul George, and that's why that deal was so important, in addition to the intangibles, the playoff experience, those sorts of things. And the other guy that I'm fascinated to see come along through all this, maybe I named him my X factor going into this series, KB, just because of what he was going to be asked to do at both ends, is Andrew Nembhard. Comes through with 20 points on top of having the Dame Lillard assignment. And the thing I like about him, KB, he's playing with a little bit of an edge. He's one of the quietest guys on the team off the court. On the court, he was raising some hell.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I certainly was, and, you know, the assignment and the asking of it is just so immense. And, you know, there's a little bit of an element of you kind of look at Nembhard and think, all right, this is a 12-round fight. Mm-hmm. It might look ugly early, and again, last night it did. I mean, hell, he runs into Dame early and gets the foul called against him. But, you know, over the course of 48 minutes, I look at Nembhard as kind of the cross-country runner and just the ability to kind of outlast everybody. And that's what he did. I thought there were several points in the game where Lillard would kind of get deep in those stents on the floor, and he'd give it up to Beverly a little bit more freely to handle the ball. And it'd be a little bit of hands on the hips and kind of gasping for air. And again, I think it's Nembhard's commitment to trying to pick him up, you know, as much as possible over the course of 94 feet. And then, Scott, I don't know if it was quiet or what, but I just couldn't believe we got to the fourth quarter and I started to look closer at him. Like, tell me, Nembhard's at 20 points? I mean, like, I guess I just didn't really feel that from him. But to go 8 of 11 from the floor, to handle it a little bit when Halliburton is off the ball, I don't believe he had a turnover. Just all of that, thoroughly impressed by what Nembhard gave you. And, you know, after game one, you know, I thought to myself, man, who would you call the second-best pacer in game one? And it was frankly laughable to think about who you would throw that label on, because so many of those guys were just very poor. But to me, clearly last night, and you've got cases for other guys, to me it was Nembhard, just on both ends of the floor, to do what he is doing, extremely impressed by what he gave you, and just vital. And it's going to be vital if and when Giannis does get back, because again, even more of that is going to go on Nembhard as well. So just absolutely huge from the young guy.
I think Andrew was a product of this franchise's mentality shift several years ago of, we need dogs. I hate that phrase almost, but we need dogs. We need competitors out there. We want guys that hate to lose. Then you look at what the Pacers have done in recent seasons, especially who they have drafted. And specifically, you think Benedict Mathurin, your favorite player, Andrew Nembhard, Tyrese hates to lose more than anyone. Man, I do think about how much it would be great to see Mathurin's competitive shine through in the series, on top of what we saw him do against this matchup in the regular season. But to the competitive side of things, that's another strong development that we've seen.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I always appreciate about Nembhard's background is, you know, he was asked to do some very different things at Florida and even in his 2 years at Gonzaga. You know, 1 year is with Jalen Suggs and the other year it is not. And just, again, from a scoring standpoint, from a lead guard, from a point guard standpoint,
yeah.
He's been thrown into so many different roles here in his young NBA career. I mean, hell, you know, I think a lot of people thought backup point guard would kind of be his natural role. And then with, you know, the Bruce Brown and the Buddy Hield and the Benedict Mathurin situation and just needing more defense in that starting lineup, that's what you're asking from him. So, you know, I was curious, would you see Aaron Nesmith on Lillard at all? Mm-hmm. Again, it wasn't the cleanest start, certainly some tough shots. I don't think he's getting a lot of help when it comes to that pick-and-roll defense. But still, I thought he hung in there. And again, it's a little bit of outlasting for the Pacers. I'm probably oversimplifying it, But Scott, it just seems like to me last night it was the Pacers are young, the Bucks are old. Can you make the Bucks look older? And I thought the Pacers were able to get out, run a little bit earlier, and again, just kind of outlast them and wear them down over the course of 48 minutes.
And as a product of that, we saw them pressuring full court and just trying to make them exhausted and make everything difficult. And I think that was one of the adjustments from the coaching staff that worked out well. Another one was tighten the rotation. Thank goodness. We've talked about it for a while. You talked about it on your show, I think a couple weeks ago, is at what would that number get to? I didn't think 8. I thought it'd be 9. But Rick Carlisle stuck to an 8-man rotation last night, and I think that proved to be something that was absolutely the right call in keeping it tight, constraint, and get more minutes out of your starters as well. What'd you think?
Yeah, it's funny. When we had Rick on the show on Tuesday, I was like, all right, I got to ask a rotation question. Know full well I'm not going to get an answer, but you got to ask it. And, you know, he offered a two-word response, stay tuned to the rotation. And, boy, he really had a total just upheaval, frankly, of what he did on Sunday. I know Jalen Smith's poor play led to an 11th man getting in the second half and Isaiah Jackson. But still, you know, with the Bucks not having a backup center, you can go with that Obi Toppin a little bit at the five, you know, play Siakam a little bit bigger. And then, like you said, it was just 8 with T.J. McConnell. I thought Ben Shepherd, also a hat tip to him. I thought he gave you some nice minutes after certainly a few rookie moments there in game one. So, you know, when it comes to playoff time, you can go, you know, you can do this. You can kind of ride it. The media timeouts are a little longer.
Yep.
I thought another key rotationally was you had the Lillard minutes. I thought it was a huge key from game one to game two that you dictated when Lillard went back in the game. You didn't do that in game one. You know, he sat for the first 5 minutes of pretty much the second quarter and the fourth quarter in game one, and the lead ballooned without him on the floor for Milwaukee. You know, I think it went from like 9-20, I want to say, in the first stint of that, and very similar, like 12-22 in the second stint. And that's just inexcusable. And if you saw in game two, you know, Rivers takes him out there kind of mid to late first quarter, and he sat for maybe 90 seconds. I mean, it was very quick, him going back into the game. And to me, it was a, you're dictating to Milwaukee, hey, we're struggling without you on the floor. It's not the same sort of rhythm we had on Sunday night. We need to get you back in the game. I thought that was really important as well.
If you're the Pacers, you look down and see Lillard scored 34. Yes, that's, we need to work on that. But he played the game high 39 minutes. If you can reduce his contributions a little bit, you got to be feeling great about, I think, where you're at. And this came in a 17-point win like it was. So it wasn't even close, you know, later in the second half. Now, from the other side, KB, I'm curious. I think what the Milwaukee Bucks will have to do is target Pascal a little bit more, send help a little bit more, and keep his 37 points per game down to into the 20s. I think that will have to be one of their big changeups.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting to see. And again, that's, I think, where the Giannis factor comes into play of, you know, whenever he does get back, again, to me, Siakam directly feels that probably more than any other Pacer. I mean, theoretically, you could have Giannis guard him, and then, you know, probably it's either Siakam or Turner getting the initial Giannis assignment. Of course, it's team, you know, build a wall when, you know, Giannis is in the game and when he's coming downhill at you. But, you know, how does that – you know, limit Siakam or lessen how great he's been throughout this series? And then also, you know, does it keep a Lillard fresher? You know, I mentioned it earlier. I thought there were times that, you know, Lillard just kind of freely gave up the ball to kind of take possessions off, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
Well, it's easier to do that when it's Giannis. You know, it's harder to do that when you're throwing the ball to Beverly or Connaughton, or, you know, I don't think Middleton has been great. Yeah, that, you know, game one, he was nice. But again, Middleton's had moments in his playoff career where he's been, whatever, a 25, 30-point guy and carried a heavy scoring burden. Does he get back to that player amidst all the injuries this year? Because they just don't have a guy that can guard Siakam. And, you know, part of it is they put so much shooting around Giannis that they've had to sacrifice probably a little bit on that end of the floor. And I think they're certainly feeling it right now. And, yeah, they're able to, you know, slow down Tyrese a little bit. But, yeah, they've got no answer individually for Siakam.
How much did you hear from fans on your morning show after game two just about trying to watch the game, inability to watch the game, because I heard not just from fans on Twitter, but I heard friends. I had a couple of phone calls from friends saying, hey, I've been waiting all day for game two. Now I'm on YouTube TV, and it's blacked out on NBA TV. I got to believe that was a big part of your discussion as well.
Yeah, it was huge. And, you know, we've honestly relied on you so much to kind of provide clarity with that. We'll probably do it again when you join us Thursday morning. So I defer a lot of it to you, and feel free to either correct me if I'm wrong or fill in the gaps. But it seemed like we had two big issues last night. One was the blackout. You know, I was talking to somebody that usually watches the League Pass, I believe in Evansville, they told me, and they don't typically black out regular season games. I should have followed up just to double check with them, you know, to make sure NBA TV games fell into that category when the Pacers fall onto that. But he couldn't watch last night. And again, I just, if you're paying for League Pass, I just don't think we can be in a day and age where you have the ability to black out playoff games. I just, if you're paying that money, to me, you get into the postseason and you've spent whatever, 82 games worth of money. That shouldn't be the case. And then secondly, the Bally app user experience is just so Jekyll and Hyde. You know, I've told the story on air before. I have linear Bally through AT&T UVerse, so I typically watch sure. You know, on channel 1749 for me. But there are times where, like, I'm on and I want to watch on the app while I do that. And so I take my phone up there and dial up the app, and the user experience is horrific. I mean, it is hit or miss. It's multiple crashing, which happens quite frequently. And if I'm paying, and Scott, you know this more than anybody because you pay close attention to this. If you're paying $20 for an app that you pretty much use for one thing, this is not Peacock or Amazon Prime where you have, you know, different viewing experiences that you in all likelihood are using that. If you've got Bally Sports, you're probably only watching Pacers on that. And for you to have such, again, an inconsistent user experience, I think it's just horrible. And I think that's what a lot of people ran into last night, was just inconsistencies of the app at the biggest moment of the year. So the frustration is league-wide. It's, you know, Pacers-centric. You know, blamed the league, blamed the Pacers, blamed to so many, you know, again, franchises. But to me, it seems like it starts at the league for thinking that, you know, this was the route and not providing a better, again, app experience for people. Because I watch streaming on Amazon Prime, you know. Peacock, there are playoff games streamed on Peacock. Notre Dame games on Peacock. You know, that's kind of the day and age you live in. So if you want to put a game on a service like that, I get it. A playoff game, I don't love it, but it's reality. Make sure your user experience is flawless. And Bally Sports could not be further from that.
And that's exactly what it starts at. It's the user experience. Why the availability of playoff games should be easy. No matter what you have, it's, I think the biggest takeaway in all this, KB, is the inconsistencies. You said, one of your listeners had trouble or had, trouble in Evansville. I had one on Twitter saying didn't have this issue in Evansville. Both broadcasts came through just fine for him. So it's all over the place. I also had Pacer fans who said I have league pass. Usually, that doesn't work. Yet it's still working here in Central Indiana. I'll take it, but it normally doesn't. So I think you have to set that expectations for fans to, they can watch the game, no questions, just go enjoy the game. And that's not what they're being privy to right now. As we wrap up here on this podcast, KB, I'm curious what you look forward to maybe most in the next couple of games. Anything from, do we see more offensive scoring from Tyrese? Do we see the Pacers defend Damian Lillard a little bit more? I'd like to see more traps on him, for example. Or is it just as simple as a feel-good moment for Indy having a first playoff home game in the last 5 years?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with all of that. I do think the trapping for Lillard needs to be more abundant. Certainly, you know, how much, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's Halliburton's lowest back-to-back scoring totals since he's been a Pacer, 19 points total in these two games. I believe that's the lowest if you combine back-to-back games. Yeah. I did think he was better last night and just facilitating a little bit. I thought defensively he actually played pretty well. And sure, I mean, you and I grew up in this market, Scott. I mean, you know what Friday night's going to be like and what that atmosphere. And the fan base deserves that. And obviously ticket numbers have risen significantly this past season. There's been some tremendous regular season environments in there. So I'm happy for the local audience and for fans that they get to experience that Friday and of course, Sunday as well. So all of that checks out. I would probably add one more non-Giannis return division.
Sure.
And that would be just how do the others perform? And others is such a negative label on it, but like Milwaukee had their others hit some big shots in game one. You know, Beasley and Connaughton and Crowder and, you know, some of those guys really stepped up for them. You know, Portis made a lot of plays as well. You know, game two, those guys didn't have that. I tend to think in these series, home court treats those types of players better. So for the Pacers, you see Nesmith hit a couple more open looks. Obi Toppin, you know, has been, I think, a better three-point shooter than a lot would think. He's struggled a little bit. Even McConnell, you know, maybe not perimeter shooting, but still, you know, not the normal McConnell that we're used to so far. Just Shepard hit a couple at home. You know, I think kind of friendly environment, you know, friendly crowd can kind of lift that. I think that'll be something to keep an eye on now that the Pacers have home court in this series.
It's a good problem to have, but you're pulling double, triple duty probably when you throw in the radio show. NFL draft is coming up. What most excites you about the direction the Colts could go on this front? What does that have you thinking about when it comes to the Colts, KB?
Sure. You know, obviously it's a very busy time. I ironically, I distinctly remember the last Pacers playoff win before last night was the same day the Colts drafted Darius Leonard and Braden Smith.
Oh, wow.
I remember being in the Pacers media room scrambling to get the South Carolina State bio of Darius Leonard. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that was the night that Boyan went off in game six. And again, that was the last Pacers win in the playoffs. So, a little bit of scramble duty. Selfishly, I kind of like the 5:30 tip, so the game will be done, and I can, you know, focus on the draft after that. But
of course,
obviously, support for Anthony Richardson, a Pro Bowl premium position defender. If I can get super specific on what you need to add, defensive end, cornerback, I think would be where I kind of label that. That would be an ideal scenario. But, you know, again, Scott, you and I have had this conversation. It's just an exciting time to be in this market. And we haven't said that a lot over the last 5 to 6 years. About the franchises here, but you know, whether you want to extend it to Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston and company, certainly there's a lot of potential with the professional sports teams in this market, but you got to experience it. And you know, I think that was the missed opportunity for the Colts last year. Of playoff football is different, playoff basketball is different. The Pacers are getting that experience. Yeah, it's a bummer Mathurin's not out there, but I think just being in these games, obviously getting some wins, but being in these games, just huge for the trajectory of this franchise. Starting to get back to what we were used to kind of growing up and even, you know, a decade ago with those Paul George teams and those runs.
Give it a week. We'll also throw the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in there. So, yes, it is a fantastic time
exactly.
of year in this local market.
Exactly. The month of May right around the corner. So, yes.
Very good, KB. Appreciate jumping on. And as always, I'll be on with you Thursday morning. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Scott. Enjoyed it, man. Great coverage as usual.
All right, that wraps up another episode of the Fieldhouse Files podcast. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.